A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 253. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion of Moondial. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
This was a six-episode serial from Children's BBC from 1988. Six 30-minute episodes adapted from Helen Creswell's novel Moondial and adapted by Helen Creswell herself.
Yes, and it's a classic bit of children's time slip drama with some ghostly elements. It's well remembered. Lots of people seem to have very fond memories of this one from their childhood. Yeah, classic bit of BBC children's drama adapted from an interesting novel. It's good stuff.
Yes, a nice bit of ghost story type things mixed with time travel. So it's quite fun. So continuing on with the story a little bit more than we did last time and getting into a couple more spoilers, I think. Having discovered Tom and the difficulties that he has being sort of a kitchen boy in the Victorian house, both Tom and Minty travel further back in time to the 18th century to witness Sarah and her very poor treatment by her aunt or guardian, and also by the local children.
Yes, and we'll mention the local children because it does produce this rather memorable scene in the final episode, which seems to take place at Halloween and features the 18th century kids wearing some quite creepy looking masks and carrying pumpkin lanterns and chanting around the unfortunate Sarah and around the moondial. And of course, we will find out about Sarah's devil's mark, which turns out to be no more than a unfortunate facial birthmark known as a port wine stain on one side of her face. But of course, in the 18th century, this led to her being labelled as having the devil's mark upon her. And that's what gives her this unfortunate reputation as the devil's child and leads to her persecution by the local children and, of course, by her rather unpleasant guardian.
Yes, and of course, the guardian in question, the Jacqueline Pierce character, is quite nasty about these things and clearly has problems of her own and is taking them out on this poor young child.
Yes, and of course, it explains why Sarah has been hooded for most of the time we've seen her in the earlier episodes, when we never quite get to see her face, and now we understand why. And it does lead to these rather splendidly spooky, almost Hammer horror scenes at times of hooded or masked children chanting around the moondial or performing strange rituals in the woods. You know, we've talked about folk horror and how the 1970s was the decade of folk horror on film and television. But there are little elements of it here in this 1980s show, Moondial. It's not entirely clear what these sort of like midnight rituals that they're up to are all about, but they do sort of add to the sort of spooky, ghostly nature of this show, Brian.
And in many of those scenes, they are taunting this young child while carrying fire, which sort of ups the idea of there being something of a threat there. It's more than just strange rituals that would be harmless. No, it's more than that.
Yes, it's dangerous and nasty.
And we also have the idea that there is this modern ghost hunter, Miss Raven, And then there is Sarah's guardian, Miss Vol, played by the same actress, both played by Jacqueline Pierce, and they appear to be connected somehow. And it isn't exactly clear how they're connected, if they're the same person, if they're aware of each other, but there's a connection there that is left to be rather mysterious.
Yes, and of course, the marvellous Jacqueline Pierce playing both roles, and when she turns up as the ghost hunter, Miss Raven, she does, you know, as we've said, she does a wonderfully sinister performance. She threatens to steal the show completely, although we don't really figure out the full mysteries of Miss Raven and Miss Vol in much the same way that the mysteries of the Moondial are perhaps left unexplained in this show. Brian.
Yes, and it isn't clear exactly how harmful and how much power in this Miss Raven actually has. Is she just a harmless ghost hunter who doesn't have any real connection to any of this, or is she actually a lot more than that? It isn't entirely clear.
No, you know, there are, as we keep referring to, there are several mysteries about Moondial, mysteries that I have to say I had some trouble figuring out. In fact, I think I've not been able to solve most of them for myself. It is a show with, well, some unusual situations and an unusual ending, and trying to sort of piece together the story of what it was all about. Well, it gave me some cause for concern. It gave me some scratching in my head, Brian.
There is a lot that's left sort of open and ambiguous, which is something that I quite like with this. We also have Mr. World, who is sort of the counterbalance to Miss Raven. And he is clearly helpful and benign. He's not really getting involved in anything, but seems to potentially know quite a bit. So how much he knows and how helpful he can be is also something we're not quite sure of.
Yes, I mean, he's lovely and benign, this charming old gentleman, you know, who's completely harmless, he's helpful, he's cheerful, but I did want him occasionally to be slightly less enigmatic in his utterances, and perhaps tell Minty and, of course, us a bit more about exactly what was going on. And what was Minty's, you know, role? What was her job? What was she supposed to do back there in the past? You know, old Mr. World clearly knows that something's happening when she touches the Moondial and that she's having these experiences in the past, but he doesn't let on exactly what her task might be.
Yes, and there is an idea of her bringing some sort of freedom or resolution to the other two children, to Tom and Sarah. But exactly what the nature of that is, we don't entirely know.
Yes, and we are skating close to talking about the ending, which obviously we try not to do on British Invaders because we like you to discover this stuff for yourself. But it does seem possible that Minty's role was to help two unhappy children from the past, and that's what she was thrown back in time to do, while at the same time dealing with her own unhappiness and distress at her mother's illness in the present day.
Yes, absolutely. There are some interesting layers to that.
And of course, it leads us to talk about this whole concept of time slip and its apparent popularity in fiction, both in books and on television and film. By time slip, I mean the idea of a character who, without what we would call a science fiction time machine, a character who just seems to be thrown backwards or occasionally forwards in time. Sometimes it's when they touch a particular object. Sometimes it's when they go through a particular door. Maybe it's when they're in a particular place. But somehow or other, the character moves in time and can interact with the people from that time. But it's done without the trappings of, as I say, the traditional H.G. Wells time machine.
And it often involves very little, if any, control by the person involved.
Yes, absolutely. That's an important point, Brian. You're quite right. They don't seem to have any control about where they go or where they're thrown to in time. Now, I'm interested in this because I'm curious as to when this first came up, and I suspect it might be Mark Twain and his story, A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, which, of course, has been adapted and filmed several times. Here in the UK, we remember, of course, from British Invaders, the rather splendid 70s ITV series called Time Slip Itself, which we covered in British Invaders episodes 27 and 28, all the way back in 2008, slipping back 8 years from present day, Brian.
Yes, that was a wonderful series that really did a very nice job with that set of ideas.
Yes, we remember those two teenagers who were thrown, I think, first of all, back in time, and then in the second series, they go forward in time, or in the second story, they go forward in time. And there, I believe it was a place that sort of caused them to slip in time. And it's a popular idea in children's fiction. Looking it up, I discovered E.E. Nesbitt's The House of Arden. Perhaps the most famous example, though, is Tom's Midnight Garden, which I'm sure many of you will remember, the book by Philippa Pierce. Perhaps the best known example, but of course there are other ones in British fiction.
Yes, there's Stig of the Dump by Clive King, and things like The Ghost of Thomas Kemp by Penelope Lively, and also Kit's Wilderness by David Allman. So there are a number of things there. And I believe there are actually a couple of fairy tale examples that go back even before A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. I believe there are some earlier examples in the fairy tale literature.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And it does say something about our interest in the past, I think. And it can also be, in some cases, a useful way of teaching some history and often children's literature and television.
Yes. I mean, as I say, I'm fascinated by the trope of the time slip in fictional narratives. As I say, you know, we've mentioned Mark Twain's Yankee. I've mentioned H.G. Wells' Time Traveller, although that's slightly different, obviously. But as you say, Brian, it might be something to do with our interest in the past, or just a very useful way to talk to kids about the past, to teach them about, you know, Victorian kitchen boys and superstition and the tormenting of children in the 18th century.
Absolutely. And as we're recording in late 2016, we have to mention that there is a very popular television series called Outlander at the moment, which deals very much with a time slip idea, and also has an interesting connection to Doctor Who that I will leave it to the listeners to look up that information.
Oh, right. I'm going to have to look that one up as well. But yes, Outlander is very popular at the moment, and it's in its second series or even beyond that, maybe. I have to say, I haven't actually seen it myself, but I'm aware of it and I know it's very popular. Now, also, we on British Invaders, we do like to cover sort of spin-offs or other versions of the shows we discuss. And Brian, before we were recording again, you reminded me, or in fact, you let me know that there is another version of Moondial or another adaptation that has been done.
Yes, I have not actually heard this, but there was a 2001 BBC Radio 4 radio adaptation of Moondial.
Fascinating, yes. A new, completely different cast, obviously, and done on the radio. Interested to know how they dealt with the sort of Minty's narration bits for that as well. But yeah, a nice sort of spin-off there into radio back in the early 2000s.
Yes, always nice to see that sort of thing coming up.
So I guess it's time for us to start talking about our own feelings about Moondial as a show from 1988. So, Brian, we like to start with the positive things first, obviously. What would you like to say up front about this show?
There's a lot to say positively about this, and not because it's the what impressed me the most, but just because it's interesting, I will start with the look and the location of this. I think the location work they did, and it's mostly location work, looks great, and it's very effective and really helps with the spooky feel. And as part of that look and the direction, they also did these very memorable spinning moon dial sequences that are very effective in making this show feel different, especially as compared to other things from that time.
Yes, it does look marvellous, actually. I mean, you know, as you said, the spinning moon dial sequences are great. Belton House in Lincolnshire is a beautiful setting for this show, which fits perfectly. Beautiful house, beautiful gardens. So that works marvellously. And of course, we've talked about this, the limitations that they had on shooting because of, I suppose, the National Trust, but also because of the use of child actors. So they do this day for night filming. And while it's quite sort of obvious that it isn't nighttime in that shot, in those shots, it does give this sort of weird twilight sort of lighting, which gives you this feeling that there's something ghostly going on. And when we're talking about these children sort of slipping backwards in time and appearing almost as ghosts in the past themselves, that all adds to it, and it works pretty well, I think.
Yes, it does. There is a sense in this of time, including time of day, being sort of jumbled. That it's daytime for one of the characters, and then suddenly that character slips through to nighttime for another time zone. So it is quite nicely done that way, with the sort of mixed up time feel, and that I thought was nice.
Okay, so that's the look and the sort of feel of the production. What about the performances by the actors? Obviously, you know, relies heavily on the three child actors to begin with.
I thought Ciri Neal as the lead in this was very good. She was about 14 at the time, and she was always watchable. You know, it was always interesting to see what that character was doing. And her interactions with Tom, with the young boy, his performance was okay. It was nothing special. But the two of them interacting was quite good. So overall, I was pretty satisfied with the performances by the young actors in this.
Yes, there's some nice stories in the commentary and the interviews about how Ciri Neal got to be cast in this role, and how she was perhaps a slightly rebellious young teenager herself at her acting school, and that the director was specifically looking for that. And of course, that helps with this character of Minty, who is having some difficulties, you know, accepting the holiday with the elderly aunt. And then, of course, as I said, her upset and distress of what's happened to her mother, and, you know, the resulting adventures she has when she goes back in time. So, yeah, I think Ciri Neal was great in the role. And the other two kids, not bad. You know, they have less to do. A lot of it is carried by Ciri. So, and she does a very good job. And then, of course, we have the adult actors.
And all of them were good. There is, I don't think anyone let this down. Jacqueline Pierce was especially good, of course. But all of the others, I think, were pretty solid as well.
Yes, you know what I'm going to say. I wanted more Jacqueline Pierce. I actually wanted more of Miss Raven in particular, to find out a little bit more about the threat that she posed to Minty's job in helping these poor unfortunate children from the past. It's a pity that she turns up so late in the narrative and perhaps isn't given more to do, unfortunately, Brian.
There were some scenes with Miss Raven and Minty walking around through the gardens and such that were really good. They were very well played. And you have this idea that you know what Minty is holding back, what she's hiding, what she won't say, but you don't really know how much Miss Raven really knows.
No, that's right. We don't find out exactly what she brings to the story in a way. But there you go. Okay, but, you know, splendid performances by very reliable adult actors and a marvellous bit of sinister scene stealing from Jacqueline Pierce, of course. We should also mention the spooky music is good. The writing of the show, you know, Helen Creswell adapts her own book. I'm interested in the device of using the Walkman as a way of recording Minty's own thoughts about her adventures to relay on to her stricken mother. So I thought that worked quite well and was very clever.
Yes, all of that was very good. It was also nice to see. I enjoyed seeing Joanna Dunham as Minty's mother. She was in a Gerry Anderson production from the 70s called The Day After Tomorrow that we covered quite some time ago on British Invaders. So it was neat to see her showing up again here.
Right. So now I didn't spot that connection. But yes, I remember that show, one of Gerry Anderson's live action shows. Right. So she's the mom. Of course she is.
And I agree the music and the effects in this were very good in helping make this sort of spooky and a little bit off from reality, which I quite liked.
Okay. So there were lots of things to like about this show. Were there any features that you found didn't work quite so well, Brian?
You know, there were actually not very many. For the most part, this was really pretty solid. The child actors who played Tom and Sarah were okay. They were not... They were probably the weakest performances of the bunch, but considering the roles that they have and considering the show, the way the show was set up, I think it worked reasonably well.
Yes, they're clearly not as good as Siri Neal, but yeah, so they're perhaps, well, slightly problematic. I like the way that this show sort of did turn some of its problems into actual positives. So we mentioned the day for night shooting, which gave it this weird effect. You know, I've mentioned the use of the Walkman as a narrative device, which I thought was quite clever. I don't know if it's in the book, but it was it works well on television, having Minty lying on her bed, talking into the tape recorder and telling her mother and therefore us what's going on. I thought that worked quite well. I thought there were perhaps, it's a show with a lot of mysteries, Brian, and of course it's not a show with a great number of answers. It leaves the viewer to try and figure out themselves what the actual, what was going on in the past and what Minty's job was. Perhaps I'm, you know, I want to be spoon-fed a bit more, but I did want a few more answers from this show as it went along.
Yeah, it definitely is a show like that, and that was something that I personally enjoyed quite a bit. I liked the fact that a lot was left to be ambiguous and to have sort of open questions there. So that was something on the whole I enjoyed, although the ending, the very ending, might have been nice if it had been made a little bit more clear exactly what happened there. But aside from that one point, I liked the ambiguity and the open-endedness of this.
Okay. I mean, you know, again, without wanting to spoil the ending, would you say that Minty has somehow affected the past, altered the past, would you say, Brian?
That's a tricky one. I would say probably so, but it could also be that it's more like the lingering spirits that she's affected. But I would lean towards saying that maybe something in the past. But yeah, that's definitely something that's left open.
Okay, fascinating.
I found the scenes where they had the larger groups of children with the masks and so on, some of those scenes worked quite well, but there were others that I found didn't work that well. It didn't really seem to add much at some points to just have these people there. And they didn't always fit into the narrative and the style of it. You know, these were just a bunch of kids they brought in from one of the local schools. And at times, I think that sort of shows that they didn't really know how to do much with this. In the more intense scenes, when the taunting and the fire was out and all of that, it was quite good. But some of the scenes leading up to that, I wasn't as satisfied with.
Okay, interesting. I mean, certainly when you see hooded and masked children carrying pumpkin lanterns and chanting round the poor unfortunate Sarah, that's it does seem quite spooky. But at other times, it does, what the children are up to is a bit more veiled and a bit mysterious and perhaps not quite so effective.
For me, these are quite minor points. And all in all, I think it's quite a good series.
Okay, so I guess we're getting close to actually making our own recommendations about this show then, Brian. Would you like to start us off?
Well, I'm going to recommend this because I really enjoyed this show. It's not a big, long-running thing. It's only 6 episodes. The performances were quite compelling, and I enjoyed the sort of mysterious aspect to it and the mix of ghostly type things and time travel type things. And, you know, it's wrapped up in this very nice look that I really quite like. So I would say, yeah, this is definitely one to check out. It's good stuff.
Okay. I mean, I had a very interesting experience with Moondar because, as I say, I'd not come across it previously at all, either the book or the TV series. It comes from that sort of great period in the 80s when I wasn't really watching any television. I was busy doing other things at the time. So watching it now, at first I thought it was rather slight and disposable and throwaway. But the more I think about it, the more we've talked about it, I think, Brian, it's really sort of intrigued me more and more. So discussing the show has sort of changed my attitude towards it. It is a time slip drama. It's probably not as good as Tom's Midnight Garden, which is a particular favourite of mine and my children, nor is it perhaps as good as that splendidly scary show from the 70s that's actually in fact called Time Slip. But actually, I quite liked Moondial, and the more I talk about it and think about it, the more I'm going to say, yes, I'll recommend it as well. It's cheap to get hold of. The DVD's a nice package. I think the commentaries and the interviews do add to the enjoyment of the show. So, I think one to check out on DVD, Brian.
Very good. It's a very nice addition to the set of things that we talk about and can come back to look at again. There's some nice things out there, and this is a nice little addition.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you remember it from the 80s, or if you've watched it more recently, perhaps with your own children, do get in touch and let us know. If you disagree with what we've said about the show, we'd be delighted to hear from you. Or if you've read the book and can fill us in on some of the similarities and differences, that would be great.
Absolutely. So, in summary, Moondial introduces us to young Minty, who is sent for a sort of summer vacation to stay with her aunt or family friend who's referred to as an aunt. And not long after she goes there, she discovers that her mother has been in this very unfortunate car accident, and while her mother is alive and it appears that she will survive, she is very much in distress and in a coma, and Minty is going to visit her mother and she is recording messages for her. Meanwhile, Minty discovers in this country estate area that there is this strange sundial, which is actually, it turns out, a moondial. And she also discovers that there is a sort of ghost effect where she can use this moondial to time travel and be a sort of ghost in the past, where these other children from the past can see her and she can interact with them in various time periods, while there is also this threat from this ghost hunter, Miss Raven, and also a similar character from the past called Miss Vole, and other characters who are oppressing Tom in the 19th century, as well as Sarah in the 18th century. And we get this very mysterious story where we see these characters interacting through time, all being brought through to a mysterious and somewhat ambiguous conclusion.
And very interesting time slip show from the BBC in 1988, and well summarized, Brian.
It's definitely an interesting one, for sure.
So, come back and join us next time. Time slip with us into the future. We'll be setting sail with some of British television's best-loved comic actors on a BBC show from 2002 called Cruise of the Gods, which you may know perhaps takes a slightly satirical look at the world of fandom. And if you're interested, it's a show that's available again on the Amazon, so you may be able to watch it quite cheaply before our next episodes, Brian.
Yes, it is definitely different from what we've been talking about this time.
Yes, absolutely.
So until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. All of our past episodes are there, including our time slip discussion from 2008. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our Facebook group there, where you can join in some of the discussions that we have on a variety of related topics. And there may even be a chance to win a copy of the Moondial DVD.
Yes, hope you've been paying attention, because there may be a question from this episode or the last one for a chance to win that DVD on the Facebook group. And check out the Voice of Geeks Network at voguenetwork.com, where British Invaders is a very proud member, along with several other geek-related shows. Plenty of entertainment to be found at voguenetwork.com.
Yes, some good stuff there. We are broadcast on Mondays and Tuesdays. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for being with us, and until the next time slip time, this is Eamon in England, who's time slipping from 2016 to 2017, talking about a show from 1988. Confused? Yes, I am.